Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming live on the Game Nashville app as well. If you're working from home, that is a great way to be able to listen to us. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out. Ryan, what's up? How are you?
How we doing, Chaser?
Man, I'm feeling good. The Braves have a 1-0 series lead in the 95 World Series.
The Dynasty Braves?
The Dynasty Braves, yep. They have a 1-0 series lead over the Indians. Darren's Indians. Greg Maddux pitched a gem. So feeling good this morning.
So I wonder what happens in Game 2 tonight.
Oh, well, you just have to tune in to Fox Sports South and be able to check that out. I think that's cool that, you know, this is obviously things that we've talked about a lot over the last few weeks of being able to show old games. Like, for you, you would probably love to see maybe the 90 World Series because you obviously were you even around? Yeah, you were a little tot.
I was not even 1 year old. Or yeah, maybe it was right around my first birthday that they won the 1990 World Series. But they actually are in Ohio, in Cincinnati. They are replaying the 90 World Series up there this week.
So. Oh, cool. So, I think that's really neat because I mean, I was around, but I don't remember 1995. Like, I was young. So, it's fun to sit back and just watch old games, and especially one where my team finally won. So
now one thing that's happening today on MLB Network, speaking of our teams, the MLB Network is replaying some vintage Reds games, and oh, cool. Not going way back in the day to the Big Red Machine, which they were, but they are going to replay Tom Browning's perfect game in 1988.
Oh, nice.
So I am recording that on YouTube TV to go back and watch at a later date and time, but I've only watched highlights of that game. So looking forward to watching that and seeing the last perfect game in Preds history.
In Preds history?
Reds history.
It sounded like you said Preds. But anyway.
I did say Preds.
You know, as I have said to Darren and Willie, because they remember all these things, and I'm like, look, I'm not trying to make you feel old, but I don't. So yeah. This is fun for me. You know, like this is like seeing it for the first time for a lot of us. So.
Well, and that's how I feel a lot about this Last Dance.
Yeah.
We've talked about that a couple times since the series debuted, but you know, we were both in our younger years when all of this went on, and there are a lot of details that I'm sure you are just learning of, that I know I'm just learning of within this entire story of the Chicago Bulls. So that has been, you know, one of the more fascinating elements of The Last Dance is all these little minute details that you didn't know either in time or no one knew until now, until this documentary. So that's been cool, too.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. But one thing we do know, the Tennessee Titans completed the draft just like the other 31 teams in the NFL. John Robinson, man, he went through the car wash yesterday. He actually appeared on both Darren Donick and Chase and Jared in the GM. So if you missed either one of those interviews, you can go to thegamenashville.com and check that out. And also subscribe to the podcast for either show or both shows. And you can hear all those interviews and all the shows. But he hit on a variety of different topics with both shows. And I thought that's what was cool is, you know, you could get different perspectives, different questions. So he hit on a lot of different things. But one big thing that both shows asked about was Jadeveon Clowney and whether he would be coming to the Tennessee Titans. Now, we know at 3 o'clock yesterday the deadline passed about compensatory picks. That's big. So now you don't have to worry about any compensatory draft picks if you sign Jadeveon Clowney. He remains unsigned. But, of course, John Robinson, we had to ask him. This is from Jared in the GM on whether – anything is imminent with Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, I think we're still looking at guys that are out there, and we'll see kind of how it goes with those first two guys that you mentioned. Logan, I mean, Logan had a great year for us last year. Don't know where that one will go, but you know we'll see. Clowney, there's nothing imminent there. You know I haven't spoken to his reps in a bit. We've been preparing for the draft and just trying to take stock of our roster today.
There you go. John Robinson on, and he was asked about Logan Ryan too. And I think he goes on to talk about Derrick Henry in his contract situation, but Nothing imminent. That seems to be the consistent message from John Robinson. I mean, what else is he going to say, obviously? But I just continue to look at the Titans being very much in the running for the services of Jadeveon Clowney. But when you hear that, you know, does anything change with you so far?
Not really, but I did find it interesting when he was on with you guys, with Darren Donick and Chase yesterday, where he mentioned the medical aspect of this. And that's something that we discussed yesterday of, you know, even though there was that 3 p.m. Deadline, it seemed like it was going to take a lot longer than that because you want the Titans doctors to get a chance to look at Jadeveon Clowney and run a physical on him before you commit yourself to Jadeveon Clowney. And if you read between the lines of what John Robinson said to you guys, you can see that adding up. You know, I know in Seattle, their hopes are starting to increase as well with all the money that they've gotten rid of on their books between Justin Britt and DJ Fluker on the offensive line. So it's definitely I think it's a two-horse race. I know John Schneider last week made it sound like the Seahawks were out, but I think this is a two-horse.
Yeah, I don't think they are now.
No, I don't think they are either. I think this is going to come down to the Titans and the Seahawks, and maybe the highest bidder wins.
Well, let's hit on that, because John Clayton, longtime ESPN NFL insider, now, of course, with 710 ESPN in Seattle, was on there yesterday and had some nuggets about how much the Seahawks might be willing to pay.
What I'm starting to hear is that they're, you know, because they were going to be in that $13 to $15 million range. I'm thinking that they may have topped that. I think they may have gone to, you know, 15 and a half or 16 million, or at least, you know, I try to get it for a way. And again, we're all talking about one-year deals. Nobody can be thinking about multi-year deal or anything else like that, because what you're looking at is that, you know, he obviously does not like the fact that he's not making $20 million, and, you know, he can go back and try to make the $20 million next year. But what you wonder about, as much as he likes it here, you know, he might want to get maybe a little bit closer to home. Maybe, you know, being out here in Seattle might be a little bit much. And, you know, it would, because I guess what's going to end up happening is that, let's say he goes to Tennessee. Let's say he goes to Cleveland. I think he's going to sign for, you know, even less than what the Seahawks were offering initially. I think it's going to be, you know, it might be as low as $10 million, which is a, you know, total craziness. But again, you know, he's made a lot of money during his career because he was a former top pick in the draft. I just say, what the heck is going on? But, you know, because he may wait till summer, which is crazy. It's like, it's not going to get any better. The numbers are only going to go down.
John Clayton, 710 ESPN in Seattle. So several things come to mind from that clip, Ryan. And that is, you know, you mentioned, does he want to go closer to home? Okay. Obviously, that would be more on this side of the country. But $10 million, does he do that? Does he maybe look at it at this point of, okay, you know what? I'll just sign a one-year deal for, let's say, $10 to $13 million. I'll go out and try and prove myself again and then chase the $20 million again next year, which from a team point of view, you probably go, okay, sure, I'll take that. I'll take 1 year at $10 million and see what I get out of you. From his point of view, what if he gets hurt? You know, that's mm-hmm. another part of the risk. And with him and the injury history, that's very much a risk. If the Seahawks are truly offering 15 to 16 and the Titans are somewhere in the 13 to 15 range or 13, 14, then I'm very curious to see how much of this is about the money and how much of this is about being close to home, being in a familiar division, being with a familiar coach, and, you know, trying to win, which both teams, I think, are in a pretty good position to try and win. But I'm just curious to see what is actually top of mind for Jadeveon Clowney.
Well, you could play this both ways if you were Clowney, because if you take a one-year deal, yes, you risk injury in that 1 year. But if you play devil's advocate to that, you could have a monster season with Mike Vrabel. You could have a monster season here in Nashville. Maybe even you get double-digit sacks for the first time in your career. You go back into free agency and you hit jackpot like you were hoping you did this offseason, where if you sign, say, a 3 or 4 year deal, that might be the last time you're getting a multi-year deal, and you would be getting it at a lesser number than you had ever intended going into free agency. So I think you could play the devil's advocate card to what you're talking about if you're Jadeveon Clowney.
If you're the Tennessee Titans, do you really need him beyond a year? Or do you have now? They didn't address pass rush. They didn't address an edge rusher in this year's draft. But you know, you got some young guys that are on the roster that you're working on developing. Do you maybe look at this as I only need him for a year?
Well, for Clowney, maybe. But look, they signed Vic Beasley to a 1-year deal. If they sign Clowney, if they sign Clowney to a 1-year deal, we're going to be right back here in March of 2021 saying this team needs a pass rusher.
But then do you play the, okay, you have room, let's say you have them both for a year, and then you try, you evaluate, you see who has the better year, and then that's the one you're going to try and keep. Now, that's a gamble. I'm not saying that's actually going to happen. You know, Jadeveon Clowney, like you just said, could have a monster season, and then all of a sudden he hits the open market and he going to get paid.
Well, I think Beasley and Clowney would both be gambles on 1 year, or let me rephrase this. I think Beasley and Clowney would both be gambles beyond just this 1 year. Because let's say Beasley has a monster year. Well, Vic Beasley has been very inconsistent ever since he came out of Florida. And sure, we've seen a lot of players, including Albert Haynesworth in our own backyard, really thrive in contract years. So if Vic Beasley has a great year in a Titans uniform, then I think he's going to be too expensive and out of the Titans' price range, at least beyond where I think John Robinson would be willing to go beyond 2020. And he's going to want a multi-year deal. I don't want to give Vic Beasley a multi-year deal. Clowney, I think you can say a lot of the same things. If he has a monster year, you're not going to want to turn around and give him $15 to $20 million on a 3 or 4 year contract going into age 28.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a catch 22 for John Robinson, but I think the primary focus has to be 2020 with Clowney. If you get him on a 1 year deal, you hope that it's just a prove it deal. You get the most out of Clowney for 1 year, and then you dip back into the pass rush field, I guess you could say, going into the next offseason. But at some point, you have to find a long term solution to put beside Harold Landry. Because you can't just keep revolving different pass rushers, whether that's spending your first-round pick on a pass rusher next year or committing to someone a little bit more safer in free agency.
Matt Bowen from ESPN going to come up in just a second. So let me ask you this, because Darren McFarland asked this question yesterday to Willie and I. 2 years, $30 million, fully guaranteed, would you do it?
Fully guaranteed?
Yep. You were on the hook for $30 million for 2 years.
3 weeks ago, I probably would have said no with the draft looming, but the fact that they didn't get a pass rusher, and I squirmed to say yes. I'll put it that way.
I would say yes, and I'm with you. I understand the concerns, but I would do it. 15 per.
I think Clowney is overrated. I truly believe that.
No question.
But 2 years, $30 million, even if it's fully guaranteed, I squirm, but I sign on the dotted line.
Okay, overrated might be the right way to put it, but is he better than – does he make what you have better?
Well, absolutely.
Right. That's how you have to look at this.
He's still an impact player, but I wouldn't say he's, you know, one of the top defensive players in the National Football League.
No, but He's the best available at what you need. And I think that
sure,
at this point, you just kind of have to do what you can do. So Jadeveon Clowney, we're on Clowney watch. That is what we're going to be doing for the next few days or few weeks or however long this takes. But Matt Bowen covers the NFL for ESPN, of course, former player. He's going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on the draft as a whole and the Tennessee Titans. We'll do that on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is hanging out at the WholesaleLink Studios powered by RumbleOn.com. We say hello to Matt Bowen of ESPN, longtime NFLer. Now, talk some football with them. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
We're feeling good. You know, the draft has passed. We actually had some sports to talk about, so that was nice. And, you know, I have to admit, I like what the Titans have done here in Nashville with their draft picks. So let's start there. What did you think about the haul? Let's start with Isaiah Wilson, the offensive tackle that John Robinson took in the first round.
Well, I think you look at the Titans draft as a whole, and it's very scheme specific. And that's what you want to do during the draft. Obviously, best player available is, you know, the goal for a lot of teams in the National Football League, but also that best player available as it fits your offense or defensive scheme. That's what you get with Isaiah Wilson. Look, you're going to run outside zone, right? That's what the Tennessee Titans are. They're going to run the football. They're going to create play-action opportunities for Ryan Tannehill in the passing game. They're going to create those open windows at the second level. That starts up front. And the reason, if we go back to the NFL matchup show, which I do with Sal Pell and Greg Cosell every week, and we're watching film on the Titans all season long, and it's really a line of scrimmage game. I mean, that's my – when everyone asks me about the Titans and how they make this run, it's a line of scrimmage game. Doesn't matter if we're talking about high school football on Friday nights or Sundays in the National Football League. You have to win up front, especially in this offense, how it's structured around the running game and the quarterback. So Isaiah Wilson, perfect fit because he's athletic. He can move people off the football, and he climbs to second level.
The thing with the Titans, too, and I believe I totally agree with everything that you just said about their scheme, but, you know, Ryan Tannehill, they decided is going to be their quarterback for the foreseeable future. Mm-hmm. They signed him to a long-term deal. You know, with bringing in Wilson, one thing that was asked of Mike Vrabel and John Robinson is how he's going to fare in pass protection, because there's still, I think, that little bit of worry with Tannehill of can he stay healthy? Can he play 16 games? So when you look at the Titans quarterback, are you a believer that he can be the one that helps keep this thing running for the next couple of years?
Yeah, based on how they game plan and what they do offensively, sure. Because if you look at, you know, really the last month of the season with Ryan Tannehill, he was throwing the ball through his target. What I mean by that, he was so confident in the scheme, so confident in his eyes and where he's going with the football. I mean, he was ripping that ball off the field. If you talk about those deep end breakers off flash and the seams, when he took his vertical shots over the top of the defense, just go back to the playoff game against the Ravens. When they hit the deep ball early in the game, that's a big time throw. It's a perfect scheme. And to answer your question about pass protection, well, if you're worried about a young offensive tackle, what do? You go more max protection. You go more two and three man routes. You delay that pass rush from the defensive line by showing run action. That protects a young offensive tackle, and it fits exactly what Tennessee wants to do. And then also with Tannehill, you get some movement traits. You're going to get more boot, more sprint out, off the run action. He can create second reaction plays because of his athletic traits. So he really fits, I think, the team identity and the team culture of Tennessee and what they show from a scheme perspective on the field.
Matt Bowen of ESPN here with us on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Matt, looking at who the Titans drafted in the second round, LSU corner Christian Fulton, in your mind, compared to other corners that were drafted in the first or second round, how capable is Fulton of being a starter in 2020?
I don't think he's capable of being involved in how much, you know, sub-packages the Titans play, whether you have five or six defensive backs in the field. And the great thing about the Tennessee defense, when we started them that matchup, is you don't know what they're doing pre-snap. You really don't, because these guys are so versatile and their coverage traits, their movement traits, what they can do is run defenders and pass defenders. So you can have Kevin Byard blitzing. You could have a corner coming off the edge. And Christian Fulton is one of those guys, I think, that can play multiple spots for them, whether he's playing in the slot, playing outside. You've seen last year, you got corners rolling to the deep half. I mean, it's the greatest thing going, guys. I'm telling you, because you get a quarterback come to the line of scrimmage, you think you know what they're doing. You don't. You don't. I mean, they're so well coached in the secondary in Tennessee, and they use their personnel so well that they can disguise coverages and do a bunch of things, bring stimulated pressure, play zone coverage, play man coverage. You know, the one thing about Fulton is he does have man coverage traits. He had a lot of on-the-ball production. I know he didn't have a lot of interceptions at LSU, but I studied his tape. He's competitive. He's great at the point of attack. What I mean by the point of attack, guys, is you got to make a play. You got to get your hands in the football at the catch point, so to say. He's excellent at that. He's physical. He's got enough speed. I mean, trust me, right now, what a guy runs in the 40, what you thought he can run in the 40, doesn't matter anymore. That stuff's gone. Can you play or not? I think Christian Fulton can play. I think he can play a long time in the league.
Matt, looking at Derrick Henry, there are opinions all over the board on whether or not the Titans should commit to Derrick Henry long term. Where do you stand on giving a running back like Derrick Henry a multi-year deal and one that's very costly?
Well, you have to look at what's happened around the league. I start with Todd Gurley. And now Todd Gurley, that contract's gone. He's in Atlanta. We've seen it happen a number of times, but, you know, Carolina just paid Christian McCaffrey a bunch of money. Now, Derrick Henry's a different style running back than Christian McCaffrey. He's not a you know, he's not a running back that's going to catch a lot of passes in the passing game. I mean, he is very good at screen game. I understand that. But he's a downhill runner between the tackles with a lot of volume. He's a heavy volume runner. You saw that through the course of last season, especially in the postseason, how many carries he gets. I would be concerned about giving a long-term deal just because of his style and how he runs the football, how much contact he brings and how he looks for contact as a runner. Is that a great thing for your football team? 100%. That goes back to what we're talking about. Win the line of scrimmage and make people tackle Derrick Henry for four quarters. You know how hard that is to do as a defensive back? I played defensive back. You don't want to see that in the fourth quarter. You don't want to see it when it gets cold. And you definitely don't want to see it in January. It's a great thing for your football team. But for the future of the position, if you invest long-term in that, you have to understand when the skill set starts to decline and when the volume catches up with the runner.
Matt Bowen from ESPN, you can see him on NFL Matchup. He's with us on the rundown. So sticking with the running back position, Darrington Evans, the third-round pick by the Titans, they're looking to have basically some help for Derrick Henry. And on top of everything you just said, how important is that going to be? And do you like Darrington Evans at that position?
I love Darrington Evans' college tape. I did. I mean, he can roll, guys. He ran a 4.41. I think he plays just like that. You know, sometimes we see guys come out of the combine with these 40 times. You turn on the film, you say, this isn't the same player. It definitely is with Darrington Evans in terms of his speed. Get him loose on screens. Use him as a receiving threat out of the backfield. He's got those traits as a receiver, whether it's running in the screen package, catching the ball in the backfield, even flexing outside the backfield to try to create matchups. He's an excellent zone runner, too. Look, a lot of times with running backs, we see them get put in the wrong scheme in the NFL. They don't produce. This is the perfect scheme for him. Now, he's different than Derrick Henry. He's not a guy that's going to get you 20 carries a game. You don't want him that for that, though, in Tennessee. You want him as a change of pace guy, a guy that can play in passing situations, and has home run ability. He's got home run ability. I'm telling you guys, you watch the film, and he catches the ball in space or he hits the edge as a runner, you better take the right angle as a defensive back or you're not going to catch him.
Matt, if I told you that the Titans were going to sign Jadeveon Clowney and my co-host came up with this number of 2 years, $30 million fully guaranteed, would you do it?
I think that's pretty fair. I think that's fair for an edge rusher, a guy that has, you know, and here's the thing about Clowney. Clowney is not, he's more of a straight line power guy. That's what he really is. You know, he's not Von Miller. You know, he's not as bendy or athletic like that in terms of his bend off the edge. He's more of a straight line guy with power. That has a ton of value, especially in a defense like Tennessee, which we're talking about with the secondary, in terms of the multiple fronts they use. You know, with Clowney, we've seen him as, you know, an edge rusher, a guy that can kick inside and create matchups, a guy that can rush him off the ball, and a guy that can rush him a two-point stance. It gives you a lot of flexibility. It's a defensive play call, and that's what you're looking for in Tennessee, based on the structure, their scheme, their defense. So with that number, would I take it? Yes, I would. There's no doubt I would, because he can get you production, and he's a perfect fit for your scheme.
Compared to where the Titans stand today, would Clowney put them over the top in the AFC South or only upgrade them marginally?
I don't want to say over the top, because I think that teams are getting better. Look what Indy did this offseason. You still have to play Deshaun Watson two times a year. I mean, you still have to compete with those teams. I think it's going to be a super competitive division once again, but it does give them an edge. It does give them an edge, and if you're a defensive play caller, you need that edge, especially against Indy with Phillip Rivers there, and we know with Deshaun in Houston, you need guys who can get to the quarterback.
Matt Bowen of ESPN. Again, you can watch him on NFL Matchup. Hey, we appreciate the time, Matt. Good to talk to you. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt.
Matt Bowen of ESPN. There, look, I love talking to people that watch film, because I think especially after a draft, I mean, you want to get the perspective of, A, people that know what they're talking about, they know what to look for, and that they study the film. And Matt seems like one of those guys, obviously, mm-hmm. with NFL Matchup. That's a big part of that show, and you can hear it with him there, that he seems to like this draft class by the Titans.
Yeah, and that was as glowing of, I guess you could say, a remark on Darrington Evans as I've heard in the last few days, ever since the Titans picked him Friday night in the third round. I mean, it sounded like Matt Bowen was on the Darrington Evans train and a huge fan of him joining the Titans. And look, if Darrington Evans turns out to somewhat duplicate what he did at Appalachian State with the Titans, then they have found themselves one of the more perfect complements that they could have found in the draft to Derrick Henry.
Another player that he was glowing about was Christian Fulton, the second-round pick by the Tennessee Titans. We will discuss that further when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I've had this stuck in my head for 3 days. Do you own or manage a small business? Are you open and want to let people know about that? Then Free Business Friday on ESPN 102.5 The Game is for you. This Friday, we're offering free advertising to local businesses that are safely open and working. This is a no-cost, no-catch offer. Visit thegamenashville.com/FBF for more information. Free Business Friday is our way of supporting small businesses as we get through this together. From your friends at ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson with you, Matt Bowen of ESPN. Good stuff from him. A lot to break down there. As we said before the break, he seemed very high on the Titans draft class, but Christian Fulton was somebody he was glowing about, and I love hearing that because, as you know, I mean, I had him in the first round. He fell to the Titans in the second round, and a lot of people are calling that one of the steals of the draft.
It's funny. John Robinson on Jared and the GM yesterday said he was experiencing some perspiration as the picks got closer and closer to 61, and Christian Fulton was really – by all accounts, that last first/second round cornerback on the board at that point, and you knew that the Titans needed a corner, and he admitted that he had some perspiration in the minutes leading up to them being on the clock. But yeah, I mean, Christian Fulton, if he pans out, is definitely going to be a really good value pick at 61. And you hear from Matt Bowen there, you know, I texted with Trevor Maddich Friday night after the Christian Fulton pick, and Trevor Maddich, he wasn't as glowing about Christian Fulton as Matt Bowen was. This is what Trevor Maddich said. He said, the pick is okay. He's best as a press corner, at his best with back to the quarterback and reading cues of the receiver. Needs more coaching, especially in recognition and zone coverage. Again, best as a press man corner. So that was Trevor Maddich's breakdown quickly over text of Christian Fulton.
Well, look, if that's what it is, then that's fine. I mean, I think he could need some work, need some development, but I still really like the pick, especially where they got him in the second round. And by the way, my gambling insider has told me Christian Fulton is 25-1 to win the Defensive Rookie of the Year. So he's already getting odds to be Rookie of the Year on the defensive side of the ball. Real quick, if you look at the second round picks in the John Robinson era, we don't know what Fulton's going to be yet, but there you go. So far, before he's even hit the field, everybody likes that. A.J. Brown last year, okay, home run. That was good. Very, very good. Harold Landry the year before. They did not have one in 2017. And then we know the three in Robinson's first draft, Derrick Henry being the best of the three, Kevin Dodd, a bust, and then Austin Johnson was serviceable and now no longer with the team. So, for the most part, I would say John Robinson has been successful in the second round. We'll see if Christian Fulton, you know, continues that trend.
I mean, if you take Kevin Dodd out of there, and you can't do that because that, I mean, it was the 33rd overall pick, and he played, what, 18 games, had one sack in his career. I mean, he was brutal. And like you said, Austin Johnson, you use the word serviceable. I would say that he just was not worth the 43rd overall pick. He's someone that, the contributions from Austin Johnson is kind of what I would expect out of a best-case scenario out of someone like Laurel Murchison, who they just picked in the fifth round, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, but your point is in 2016, second-round pick, Derrick Henry. 2017, no second-round pick. 2018, Harold Landry. 2019, A.J. Brown. If Christian Fulton is a lot like the last three names that I just listed off, then, yeah, it's going to be a great value pick at 61, and the Titans will have found themselves the corner that they needed out of this draft.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just saying, I think it's a good pick. It's a value pick, and we'll see what happens with the second rounder, Christian Fulton. So we also had to ask him about Jadeveon Clowney, and I threw out the question that Darren threw out to us yesterday of 2 years, $30 million fully guaranteed. He said he'd do it. He said that he would go for it. And you asked the question of Jadeveon Clowney, would that give the Titans the edge in the AFC South? Does that put them over the top? That's a very, very good question because I'm trying to look at the roster – overall, and you know, when you say that, put them over the top, is that the one missing piece?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's really the case. He makes them better. He definitely makes them better, but does he win them the South?
I thought Joe Rexroad put it perfectly in his column on The Athletic over the weekend, where he was basically reacting to the Titans not drafting a pass rusher, him saying, all right, next up, sign Jadeveon Clowney. That's next on the to-do list for John Robinson. And Joe Rexroad, I thought, put it perfectly when he said the Titans could as easily go 8-8 with Jadeveon Clowney as they could go 11-5 without him. And I thought he put it perfectly. Not that I would expect this roster to go 11-5 if the previous rosters went 9-7, but I guess you never know. You know, I do think Clowney, the domino effect of Jadeveon Clowney would really improve what we currently see with the defense. And what I mean by that is that he at least would get some pressure on the quarterback. He at least is someone that defenses have to game plan for, where I don't know if you can say that about someone like a Vic Beasley, or even on down the road with a Kamalay Correa or DeAndre Walker. DeAndre Walker isn't – we have no idea what he's going to be.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I liked that pick when they made it, and then he got hurt, and I kind of forgot about him.
Well, and that – you can't trust him. Like, if he turns out to be a good player, great. But he's not someone that you want to go into the 2020 season just relying on as one of your primary depth pass rushers. If he turns into that, great. But I'm not going to sit here and rely on that. So if you have Clowney and Landry as your two primary pass rushers and you're rotating in Vic Beasley, all of a sudden you have a pass rush that catches the eye of opposing teams. And it's a pass rush that if you get to the quarterback enough, which you would expect out of that level of talent, then the domino effect of that is that the secondary, you know, with Christian Fulton as a rookie, Malcolm Butler has had his ups and downs in a Titans uniform, same with Adoree Jackson. Although Malcolm Butler was improving last year, Adoree Jackson definitely improved last year. The secondary is going to look better because of Clowney and that pass rush getting to the quarterback quicker. Yeah. So I think the domino effect of that, especially – against Deshaun Watson in the division, against Philip Rivers in the division, against Patrick Mahomes if you have to face him in the playoffs again, that matters. And that's why I think getting Clowney at a reasonable number on a short-term deal has to be a priority right now for John Robinson.
Is Patrick Mahomes the litmus test now of okay, you have a good pass rush? I mean, he's such a unique and just so talented, but – we saw in the AFC title game of just how difficult he is to bring down that I think that that's almost what you have to measure everything against when you're looking at pass rush, and especially when you're this team, because it's so top of mind because that's the last game they played.
I would say he's one of the three quarterbacks that you have to think about.
Deshaun might be the other one.
Deshaun Watson, because he's in your division and the Texans have had your number in recent years. And you know, I know they went down and beat him in Week 17, but the Texans had nothing to play for in that game. When games have mattered against the Texans in recent years, the Titans have not fared well. So you got to get pressure on Deshaun Watson. They could have used a lot of pressure on Deshaun Watson in that Week 15 game here in Nashville, and they couldn't stop Deshaun Watson in the second half. So I would say Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes. Do you include Lamar Jackson in that if you're the Titans?
Yeah, and they did a good job with him. But, yeah, I'd probably put him in there. And, I mean, I know he's NFC, but, you know, Russell's one of those guys that makes it difficult on you. But
if you're the Titans, you're not game planning for Russell Wilson when you're constructing your roster. I would say Mahomes, Watson, whoever's the Colts quarterback, and Lamar Jackson. Yeah. I don't know if I really include any other AFC quarterbacks in that. In that discussion right now?
No, not right now. I think those are the ones right now.
The primary ones.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so does Clowney put you over the top? All right. The thing with this roster overall is I like how it's being constructed. As I have said multiple times, I think it's incomplete. I think there's still some pieces that could be added. There's some tweaks that could be made. But the one thing that just worries me is If you take a couple of major pieces out, the whole thing might collapse. And what do I mean by that? I mean Derrick Henry, for one. And I love the Darrington Evans pick, but I'm not ready to make him the feature back.
No.
Derrick Henry has to be a part of this. So I worry what happens if he gets hurt. And I worry what happens if Ryan Tannehill gets hurt. And that's on top of, I need Ryan Tannehill to do what Ryan Tannehill did last year. So yesterday when John Robinson was on Darren Donick and Chase, you know, he went through the draft and he talked about Cole McDonald, the quarterback out of Hawaii that they took in the seventh round. He brought up Logan Woodside, and I flat out asked him, I said, John, is your backup quarterback on your roster?
Well, I mean, I think we're excited to work with Logan. You know, I've said it before. He's matured a ton as a player and as a person since coming to our organization. You know, I've gotten some videos of him throwing around here with some guys, and he looks really, really good. I thought he had an outstanding preseason for us last year, and anxious to see if he can take that next step. Anxious to work with Cole and see what he can bring to our football team. I certainly think the talent level is there, but we've got to work with them. You know, we've got to get on the grass. They've got to get chemistry with the receivers. They've got to command the huddle when they step in there. We can't see any of that now, because we're all at home. But I think once we get back to, you know, to football and somewhat, you know, normal walk of life, then we can make those evaluations and determine, yeah, we feel good about this, or, you know, who's out there that we, you know, may want to add to work with.
So there was a classic John Robinson answer, non-answer, but, you know, I liked how he answered that question, because I don't think he knows. I don't think he knows if the backup's on the roster or not. And, you know, look, D-Mac for years has brought up this backup quarterback conversation with this team, especially mm-hmm. when you have a starter like a Marcus Mariota, like a Ryan Tannehill, that, you know, they are mobile. They get hurt in the pocket, then get hurt outside the pocket. I mean, it doesn't matter. You want to make sure that you have a capable backup. And I worry about that situation with this team, because, as I just said, you take Derrick Henry out, this whole thing might collapse. You take Ryan Tannehill out, probably the same thing, unless you can find a serviceable backup a la Ryan Tannehill, like Ryan Tannehill was to Marcus Mariota. You got to find that guy, and I don't know if Logan Woodside is that guy.
I don't know if they are going to find that guy at this point.
Would you take Flacco? Would Flacco be that guy at this point in his career?
I mean, I would sign him to a one-year deal. He's probably the best remaining backup quarterback out there. Does Joe Flacco want to be a backup quarterback? I think that's another question you have to ask. I mean, he's 35 years old. He's been a starter really his entire career. It kind of depends on whether Flacco wants to go through a season or two as the number two.
Well, if he wants to keep playing, that's his only choice.
Well, yeah.
He's not going to get a starting job.
But, I mean, he's 35 years old. He's won a Super Bowl. He could easily just say, you know what, I'm done. I had a good run in Baltimore, and I don't want to, you know, commit myself to being a backup quarterback for the rest of my career. He could easily say that at age 35. If he does say that, then the options do not look very good. I mean, you're talking about Blake Bortles, you're talking about Geno Smith, you're talking about Trevor Siemian or Matt Moore, names that don't get you excited at all.
You wouldn't take Cam as a backup?
I think he's in the same boat as Joe Flacco. Does Cam Newton really want to be a backup? I don't think so.
I don't think so. I don't think he does. He may not have a choice, but I don't think he wants to be a backup.
Right.
Flacco is a little bit different than, you know, I think Flacco, if he's realistic, he knows that the best he can do is being a backup. Cam can still be a starter. There just aren't any jobs now. But I do believe that Cam can still be a starter.
As long as he's healthy.
Yeah, and that's the question. That's the big if with him. So he might be better off doing what Jameis Winston is doing and basically taking a job to be a backup for a year, and then you know, who knows what happens after that. I'm very impressed with Jameis Winston, and the fact that he is looking at the New Orleans Saints, one of the best teams in football, being the backup to arguably one of the best quarterbacks of all time, learning for a season, and then seeing what happens after that. I that shows maturity in my mind. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if somebody's told him to do that or he decided that on his own, but that's a great path if you're Jameis Winston.
Even if he doesn't play very often in New Orleans. you know, as long as he takes advantage of the opportunities that he does get, it could result in another starting gig going into 2021, a la Teddy Bridgewater. But I think with Ryan Tannehill and the Titans backup situation, we're both on the same page here that they have to find a more reliable backup than Cole McDonald or Logan Woodside.
Yeah.
Because Ryan Tannehill missed, before he became a Tennessee Titan, he missed 24 games in the three seasons prior. And that was one of the biggest knocks on Ryan Tannehill coming in, was that he was injury prone. Now, we didn't see that last year in a Titans uniform for Tannehill, but that is something that you have to keep in mind. And if they wimp out on the backup quarterback position and he goes down in week four, then that's on John Robinson.
Yep. I agree. So, look, I liked him in preseason. I'm like, hey, this kid can sling it. But, again, I'm not ready to say he's the backup that I'm going to trust to win three or four games or whatever he would need to do. So I just don't know about that. It is the Rundown, Chase McCabe and Ryan Porth. We'll shift gears when we come back. The NHL, how close are they? What's the latest on return scenarios? And Pecorine spoke to the media. You'll hear some of that when we return on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
That's something that, you know, me personally, I've been thinking about too, that, you know, what is the time window and how much time we have before the next season starts. And, you know, I feel like realistically, I think something has to happen beginning of June or things, you know, something like that, that it is possible. But I feel like we still have some time. I still keep my hopes up, still keep preparing for this season. So, you know, I feel like, you know, until we hear news one way or the other, you try to approach this like it's a little stop. It's a thing we all have to live through, and hopefully, you know, we all come back and get back to, you know, get to do what we love to do, and that this season, that's, you know, moving into playing hockey and hopefully playoffs after that.
Predators goaltender Pekka Rinne yesterday on a Zoom call with the media on the potential return to the NHL season. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth here on the Rundown. Marquise Munson back at the Wholesale Inc. Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. You can listen on the Game Nashville app as well. So, Ryan, I know that there the Athletic has an article out about, you know, potential return that Pierre LeBrun has put together. Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan of ESPN, they did one that I read through last night. I mean, we know all the scenarios that have been floated about and dismissed over the last 6 weeks or so, but could we be seeing some light at the end of the tunnel that the season could resume?
I hope so. I think the fact that Gary Bettman came out last week to Sportsnet and said that, you know, kind of laid out some of the options that are on the table right now, and the fact that they're looking at the possibility of up to four central hubs being the homes of these games without fans. You know, according to ESPN.com, sources tell ESPN that the home rinks up for debate in this for potential sites are Minnesota, Vegas, Columbus, Dallas, Carolina, and Edmonton have been the closest examined venues and cities to do this in. I think the fact that the NHL is getting deeper into this gives me more hope that this is actually going to happen. And look, we all know the money at stake here if they don't complete this season. Greg Wyshynski put it in his story, or in his joint story with Emily Kaplan,
yeah,
that the financial impact of getting rid of the rest of this season could get up to $1 billion for the NHL. And
Matt Duchene brought that up with us last
week. Yeah, and it's – they wouldn't recoup all of that, because you wouldn't have ticket sales, but you would have TV revenue, and that is huge. And we've talked about this before as well, where the fact that the Olympics have been postponed opens up a lot of TV time on the NBC family networks in July and August.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that's important too. That's going to allow – that could allow them to bring the season back in June or July or what have you. So they go through this breakdown of the committee that's been put together and who all is on that committee. There includes some players: Ron Hainsey, Connor McDavid, Mark Scheifele, John Tavares, James Van Riemsdyk, along with some executives. Gary Bettman, of course, is a part of it. How much do you think that they're talking and looking at the NBA? Because I've always linked those two leagues together because of the relationship that David Stern and Gary Bettman had, because they share arenas. It just always feels like the NHL and the NBA are in sync. The NBA sent out a memo last week saying that teams could return to facilities May 1st. Now they move that to May 8th, you know, depending on what the states are saying. So how much do you think that those two leagues have really been talking?
I bet they're talking quite often. But if you're the NHL, if you're really any league, I think you're also having to look at what's going on in Taiwan right now with the Professional Baseball League out there. I know it's only a 5-team league. The COVID-19 crisis hasn't been as large in Taiwan, but they are playing games in front of no fans, and they're doing it successfully. And taking models like that from other countries, I think, is important too, if you're the NHL, if you're the NBA, to see what's working after they've gotten through, after those countries have gotten through their worst times with COVID-19.
Yeah, and I know that, like, I was reading in this with Greg and Emily, that what would happen if a player tests positive, you know, does that shut the whole thing down? And honestly, they don't know the answer right now, but they did. Gary Bettman is quoted in there saying that, you know, if it was one player or a handful of players, that they would have things in place that would allow them to keep going if it's safe for the players. But the fact of the matter is, I just don't think they know. I don't think they will know until they're in that situation.
Well, the fact that they said we don't believe that one positive test would necessarily shut the whole thing down, I think, right, is a positive, because we've all thought that, you know, the biggest risk in this is what if one player or one coach or one team employee gets it, then you're going to have to go into the mode that we all went into in March, which was shut everything down until it's safe again to play. If they have a policy in place for if a player or coach or employee does test positive and it's not going to wreck it, and it's a good policy, then I think that gives this thought of having the central hubs in different locations and completing the regular season and postseason, I think that gives that thought more hope.
Yeah. So this is this is a tough question. It's an open-ended question because I don't even know if I really know the answer.
Oh, boy.
Gut feeling, do you think they come back?
Yes.
When?
I think, with Pekarene, with what he said, I think he's bang on around the start of June. John Scott, former NHL player, tweeted out over the weekend that he was hearing that that NHL facilities could open around June 1.
And they would need probably a 2-week training camp, so to speak, or maybe a little bit longer, but that was something that I was reading through in this article.
If everything continues to trend in the right direction here, would not be surprised to see the regular season finish in July, and then you have the playoffs start after that. Maybe the playoffs go until mid-September or through September, and they can delay the start of next season without it affecting the number of games that they play, and then you're getting back on track.
Well, I hope that plays out, because one, I miss sports, and two, I miss sports, and three, I miss sports, and did I mention I miss sports? So I really hope
don't
that,
we
that
all?
Yeah, I really hope that it plays out. We'll continue to monitor it. That's going to do it for another edition of The Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson, I'm Chase McCabe. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next. ESPN 102.5 The Game.